Hi, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of the Universal Narratives podcast. As we are still exploring the impact of the pandemic on teaching and learning in different countries, we will be looking at how the pandemic affected language teaching and learning today in Canada. As everybody knows, language education involves a wide range of interactive activities and also relies on authentic communication. Since the pandemic started, language education shifted primarily to virtual platforms. Today, I will speak with Alice Kim, a TESOL professional who has been teaching English language learners from so many different backgrounds and who also taught in different parts of the world, to unpack some of these issues. Welcome to our podcast, Alice.
Thank you so much for having me, Selma.
Thank you, Alice. So before we start, I would like you to tell us a little bit about your background, your experience, and the English language learners that you teach right now.
I would say that it's been a fairly long journey, at least for me. It's been about 15 years of teaching in various contexts with different students in different countries. And it started in 2005. I would say in 2005 when I actually traveled to Egypt to work in a completely different context. And after meeting a few key people there, I enrolled into the teaching fellowship program at for the MA TESOL at the American University in Cairo, which is how I know you. And that was my first introduction and foray into teaching English to speakers of other languages, and more specifically in an EAP context. So I was teaching EAP mainly while I was at AUC, but during the intervening summers, I taught adults, I taught refugees, and I tutored as well. And then after AUC, I was there for about 2 years. I went on to the Gulf, and I was in the Gulf for about 4 years in total, 2 years in Doha and 2 years in Kuwait, and that was, those contexts were also EAP. And then after that, I moved back home to Toronto and tried to get in back into the teaching field. I didn't go into EAP initially. I worked at language schools, I tutored, I worked at IELTS. And eventually I was able to find work in the EAP context again. So currently I'm an English language instructor at New College's international programs at the University of Toronto. And my students in this context, our context is predominantly international students from China who have received a conditional offer into U of T. They have to complete our program successfully in order to move on to university. So it's a foundation program, and that's where I'm at. That represents 15 years, or my last 15 years.
That's great. And just to clarify, EAP is English for Academic Purposes.
Right. Yes.
Correct. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Great. So Alice, as you know, like the pandemic started in March of last year, and since then, most learning and teaching has been done virtually. So my first question to you would be, how has the pandemic impacted the area of language education in Canada since the pandemic started?
Yeah, so I would imagine that like many, many contexts around the world, the pandemic was a huge shift in teaching. It did definitely, favors instructors and teachers who are already very technologically savvy and understood different online platforms that are available for instructors, but not all instructors come with that knowledge base. So it required a bit of training, workshops, and a quick transition into teaching online. Which had its, you know, it was sort of a trial and error process at the beginning. I could speak to what happened in my specific context. I remember last year, March 13th, 2020 was the last day that I taught in class. Okay. And then which was a Friday. And then the following Monday, we were online. So over the weekend, there was lots of communication between the administrators and the teachers, the instructors over the weekend. about what to do come Monday. And so we were teaching online the following Monday using, so our LMS is Quarkus, which is powered by Canvas. And we initially used Blackboard Collaborate for our online classes, but found that Zoom worked a lot better. And it was just, by that point, we had 3 weeks left of the semester. So it, to some degree, it was good because it was us wrapping up the term, the semester. And it was a huge transition for the instructors and the students as well. But I think, we kind of got through it. It was the intervening summer of 2020, where a lot of transformation actually had to happen in preparation for September 2020. And that's where I think, at least for myself, the real learning of how to shift an entire curriculum that you've taught in person into something that you can do online.
I think it's very similar to the US context as well. And I know that a lot of like language schools in New York, for example, that are offering English language programs to international students, either adjusted to virtual settings, or some of them just postpone their programs for, you know, some time until they were able to figure out how to offer these services to students coming from other parts of the world. So let's focus on your students. What are some of the challenges that you believe that your language learners are facing right now in light of the pandemic?
Yeah, so as I said, most our students are predominantly students from China, and we do have students from other parts of the world, but I would say about over 90% of our students are from China. And the first major hurdle was simply the time difference.
Yeah.
So they are right now, they are 12 hours ahead.
Yeah.
So it was trying to find an optimal time for both parties, both the instructors here and the students over there, plus the 10% of students who are from other parts of the world, all over the world. So that was a challenge. We settled on teaching here at 9 a.m. to 10:30, and which means it was 9 p.m. to 10:30 p.m. there. So that was the first hurdle. And then, so students having to getting used to taking classes in the evening.
So
I think the instructors had to think about that when students are, you know, perhaps not as active, or they don't turn on their cameras, which just as a personal pedagogy, I don't force cameras in the classroom. Mm-hmm. I don't make it a mandate to have your cameras on. And the reason for that is because there are a number of reasons for that. Number one is privacy. Students often have the right to privacy, first of all, but second of all, they don't always live in environments that they can control.
Yeah.
And that is out of their hands, and I'm aware of that. It also helps with sometimes the internet connection. Their internet connection improves with sometimes. So for a number of reasons, I do not mandate cameras in the classroom. However, I will say at the beginning, being able to see some of your faces does help me as an instructor, because we get feedback, we get the nonverbal feedback. And I try to explain it to them from the instructor's perspective, and with me emphasizing that it's not mandated. So the outcome is that I would say in a given class, I would have maybe 20 or 30% of the students with their cameras on, and most of them do not, and that's fine. So that was another, I think, adjustment or challenge that students and instructors had to overcome, which I know many or all instructors have experienced. And then finally, trying to figure out how to establish classroom rapport, manage group dynamics online, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's one area that everybody is, all teachers are concerned about behavior mainly. The second thing is establishing rapport. collaboration and, you know, collaborative work in the classroom. I believe these are areas that everybody is concerned about in a virtual setting. And I also believe that it's more challenging when your students are in a whole different continent, different time zone, and you haven't really met before. So when the pandemic, for example, started in New York, I would, you know, speak about the context of like schools, for example, teachers had already met the students. So they kind of like have an idea about the challenges these students have, as well as their abilities, what special needs they have. But when you're teaching somebody in a different continent you haven't really met before, I believe it's more challenging. So let's talk about teachers coming together and trying to support students at this time. I'm sure you and other educators in your department, in your school, talk about ways where you can, you know, bridge these gaps and assist your students. Would you like to maybe reflect more on that?
Sure. So, I mean, the support that we received from our program admin and coordinators was incredible. And I'm thinking back to last year when we had to transition from in-person to online over a weekend, lots of communication happening, lots of, so our assistant director recorded a whole bunch of videos showing us how to do this, how to do that on Quarkus, made suggestions on, how, you know, a particular objective could be executed online, what the options were on Zoom in terms of breakout rooms and how to manipulate them. So there's a lot of help in that from the assistant director and our admin. And then the instructors, you know, I think there was help simply for, like one example I can think of is some instructors would record the video and share those videos, record a lesson and share the lesson with other instructors. So that lightened the load in terms of simply recording lessons. Because in our program, we had the synchronous classes and then we had another hour of asynchronous class. So the asynchronous class would be completely recorded and then the sync class would be done together. And it's interesting because even though our classes were shortened, our sync classes were shortened, I felt like the work in some ways doubled, at least in the beginning, because there's a huge learning curve, learning how to do various things online with our LMS, with Zoom, with other online, with other educational software. And that was a large learning curve for many instructors. So yes, it felt in some ways like it was more work, but now a year later, I think many of us have adjusted, myself included. So we in our program, we meet weekly. We share the challenges that we've had. We come up with suggestions for how to deal with them. We share resources. We share recorded lessons. So that's been helpful. It's a very collaborative effort, and that's needed for this situation.
Yeah. Okay. So that's on the side of the teachers, but how does the schools and the instructors support English language learners in a different country in terms of like technology use, making sure they're accustomed to using the new platforms, they can use these platforms to participate, to send their information, to send their work? Do they receive any training on that as well on the part of the students?
So our students are predominantly from China, and that, in terms of technology and the kind of software we can use, that was limited. For instance, we couldn't share YouTube videos with them. So we use a lot of content online, including from YouTube, and we don't really use social media, but we might reference it. But as using that example, we would record our YouTube videos here and then send them there. In terms of educating the students on how to navigate the LMS and how to communicate with instructors through various communication mediums, we would talk about that in the async class. Sometimes we would record videos or little snippets to show them how to find the documents they need. We also use OneDrive. To share content with our students. So in my actual classroom, we use the LMS We use OneDrive to disseminate information, email to communicate, the LMS to broadcast announcements and things like that. When I want to collect homework, for instance, everything has to be uploaded into their personal OneDrive folder, and I would go into those folders and find their work and follow up and give feedback on their documents. We also have a class folder in OneDrive where we do class work when we're in the asynchronous class. Mm-hmm. So a Google Docs would serve a similar function, but we don't use Google Docs also because students don't have access to that in China. So yeah. So that's kind of how we conduct the synchronous part of our class with our students.
Yeah. It so many variables to keep in mind when you're teaching students from different countries and different backgrounds in terms of what's available in these contexts and what's not. Okay, so let's move on. My next question focuses on your professional identity as a teacher in times of the pandemic. We have all been impacted professionally, and we have all started thinking about our roles as teachers in a different way. You know, given what happened last year, how do you view yourself differently in terms of your growth as a professional, in terms of the different roles that you play as a language professional? Do you want to maybe discuss a little bit more about how you view yourself now, a year after the pandemic started?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that is something that I think many teachers have thought about. I've thought about it myself. I'll tell you, for me, one thing I think that has changed in me over the past year is I'm allowing myself to appear more human to my students, if that makes any sense. Yeah. For instance, when I am teaching them in the asynchronous class with Zoom, they see the inside of my home, right? They see, they can see my personal context. I'm also, there's also the feeling of, there is a certain intimacy, I guess, when it comes to conducting classes online, because everyone can potentially peek into the lives of other people. We're not in a brick and mortar building where everything is sort of, for lack of a better word, neutralized. Yeah. So when my students do turn on their cameras or do speak, sometimes I hear their parents in the background or a dog barking. And it's so we all have to kind of reveal ourselves a little bit more than we would in a physical classroom. Yeah. And in the beginning, I was a little nervous about that. I wasn't sure how I was going to approach that, because I think prior to the pandemic, you could say that I kind of maintained a certain persona of being a professional, of being their instructor, not coming from absolute authority, but you know that the boundaries are clear. Like I'm here, I'm their instructor, but these are the boundaries of our relationship. And that may be something particular to me. So I think when the pandemic happens and it forces us to work inside our homes and reveal a little bit more of us ourselves, I realized I need to surrender to that. And, you know, I can make mistakes in front of my students, especially in the beginning when things weren't as clear cut, or I wasn't really adept with Zoom or any other online platforms. I made mistakes. Sometimes my internet would cut out and I would rely on my students to hang on and wait for the instructor to come back on.
Yeah.
So I think there might be a humanizing aspect to this whole experience. And I think for me as an instructor, that was, I think in hindsight, beneficial. It made me more relaxed, because I accepted that this is not going to be perfect, and that the students, we're all trying to go through this together while there's a pandemic happening, right? While there's tragedy all around us, we're still trying to maintain some sense of normalcy. So I think having a human touch is absolutely okay in this context.
Yeah. And do you think this, the pandemic affected you, like, you know, on a personal level right now, is going to continue after you go back in person to the classroom?
I would like to think so. I would like that to happen. I think for myself personally, when we do go back into the classroom, I want to be more of a relaxed or more human instructor for my students.
Yes.
I don't know how it's going to feel when we go back into the classroom, because then we kind of all know our roles in the physical classroom. Students, you know, sit here, instructor sits here. This is the role of the students and what they're expected to do and how they're expected to behave. We go immediately into our roles because we're comfortable with that. But I wonder if when we do go into the classroom, after the entire world has had this experience, maybe they might approach it differently. I would like to think so. I was just going to say, with that being said, I do wonder if we're actually, all of us are going to go back into the classroom in mm-hmm. the same form. I wonder if it might be kind of a fusion of online and in-person work.
Yeah, I actually believe that, the pandemic has given us options of how we can maybe teach and learn in the future. And it made it, you know, things that we used to say are not doable in the past are doable right now. Like, for example, I just had a teacher parent conference the other day with my child's teacher. And you know, we never did them via Zoom before, but yeah. Now we're doing them via Zoom, and it allows for more flexibility for everybody. And it's just doable. We never had these ideas in mind before. We maybe thought it's not personal. It's not, you know, it's not formal enough, but now all these options are available. And I think we're going to reconsider how to do things in the future. It's going to give us more options of how to learn, how to teach, how to interact with other professionals, which in itself is something very positive.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, totally. I was thinking the same thing. Like we have our weekly instructor meetings and we do them online now, of course, but
yeah,
why can't they be online in the future?
Yes.
Yeah. So things like that.
And all these professional development sessions that teachers always complain that they want to, you know, they don't want to stay after school hours or they don't want to attend on weekends are doable online. And, you know, just the concept of like, you know, working from home and being productive in your own comfort, in your own home, exactly. is something that we can all, you know, consider in the future. And I think this is one of the positive sides of the pandemic. Okay, so Alice, how do you think the current teaching and learning, this question kind of like helps you elaborate on what we just discussed. How do you think the current teaching and learning situation will impact English language teaching and learning in the future?
I see the online component of language learning and teaching being more predominant in the future, even when we go back into the classroom. I see us having, well, we'll be hopefully a lot more comfortable with technology and online platforms, but I think, and I hope that the use of online technologies and software will, and communication and ways of doing things will be more predominant. Because I don't think I realize now that everything doesn't have to happen in person. We need to have that human touch. Yes, I completely agree with that. And getting to know your students in person is a completely different thing than getting to know them online. So I would like to see that we take the positives out of both the in-person experience and the online experience and merge them together so that we have something that is the most optimal environment for both learners and instructors. I guess that's the hope. That's the hope.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. So my last question, which is a question I ask to everybody who I interview for this podcast, is how do you think the audience of this podcast can learn from the Canadian experience when it comes to teaching and learning after the pandemic?
What I'm thinking is the Canadian experience, I imagine, is not that different from the American or I guess other Western contexts, but I think in my specific context, it was the So the collaborative effort to support each other in this time of uncertainty, to help each other learn, because we're all learning at the same time, to allow for trial and error, to allow room for error and mistakes, mm-hmm. Which results in us, maybe our relationships with one another changing, because now we see each other as a little more complex, right? We're not all trying to be these perfect models of what we think an instructor or student should be. And more logistical or practical things, like how important an internet connection is, how important access to actual technology is. Not all students have, you know, 4 or 5 devices at their disposal. And understanding that, you know, students are also humanized in this process, right? And so that also goes into consideration when a student suddenly does not show up for a while, or does not participate or never turns on their camera and does not respond in class. What I would do in that situation is contact them and arrange a meeting with them whenever they can. And maybe there's a certain level of comfort of doing this on Zoom as opposed to in person.
Yeah.
I think I lost my train of thought. I don't know how I got there.
Yeah. I see what you're saying. There is a human element that the pandemic made very evident to us, very obvious. And it's something to consider in the future.
Right. And yes, now I remember from the Canadian experience, what can we take away?
Yeah.
I think that, you know, to accept and embrace the evolution or the change in the evolution and change in terms of the way we do language instruction and the way in which we see students and our relationships with students, they have shifted with online instruction and accommodating students as much as we can, mm-hmm. because we are not physically close to them anymore. So everything is like the time of the classroom, for instance, that is a very basic accommodation. In terms of selecting the 9:00, that was considered the most optimal time for both parties. Keeping in mind that some students also have classes in the morning in their country, right? So they'll have class 8 in the morning and then 9 in the evening, same day. It's doing the best that we can under the circumstances.
So I think what you're saying here is that keeping in mind that flexibility is key in these situations, and it's something that we have to also consider in the future when designing any teaching and learning programs or classes, because as we are being very flexible right now, trying to accommodate our instructors and our teachers and our students as well, why can't we do that in the future and make sure that everybody is learning at a time that works best for them and also using the resources that are most appropriate to the context where they are?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Great. Okay. So that was very eye-opening. That was very informative, Alice. And I think the whole way that we're teaching English at this point of time is something to always reflect on and think about in the future. Would you like to add anything before we end this podcast episode?
I guess the only thing I'd like to add is, you know, I hope that for everyone that, you know, despite the immense trauma and tragedy of this whole pandemic, and it is a trauma and tragedy collectively, that I hope that many aspects of our work lives and our personal lives will change for the better. And maybe this is a way of opening our eyes to different ways of working and being and relating. So that's what I hope for. And thank you so much for having me today.
Thank you so much, Alice.